from KQED.
I am the tech worker, but also I'm like, I'm a black woman in tech.
Yes.
It's everything MLK died for. Like, yeah. Don't get it twisted. I'm like, I like, please.
Hey everyone, I'm Emmanuel.
I'm Carly.
And I'm Jamidra.
And we're the hosts of
The Cooler.
So usually we wait until our second or third segment to interview guests on this show, but today we are so excited, we just can't wait.
What do we have, Emmanuel?
I'm glad you asked. We're here with one half of the super successful podcast, Call Your Girlfriend, Aminat Tussaud.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being you and existing and being in this room with us.
Bloody podcast royalty here.
Okay.
This room is very exciting right now. I am very happy to be here. It made me really happy when you reached out to me because obviously I love public media and public radio. But it makes me really sad sometimes, you know, that the voices are very old, very white.
Yes.
Sometimes not very relevant. Yeah. My bad. But, you know, it's like the new wave is here. Yeah. We are like riding the wave. So that makes me really excited.
We are here.
We are trying.
So as someone who knows the land of podcasting and we're newbies, what kind of tips do you have for us as we embark on this journey?
It's an interview question, but it's also a very practical question.
You know, my first tip is usually don't drink. You're podcasting. Don't drink near the equipment. The thing that's really exciting to me about podcasting right now is that, one, it's really intimate, but it's also this venue where people can really pursue their curiosity and be as creative as they want to be and be themselves without this pressure of, you know, like producing written words. I'm convinced that like writing is over very soon. that's my future prediction. I want to write a young adult novel about this. I'm like, when the writing stopped.
I'd read that.
The irony is, thinking, are we gonna write it?
Yes.
You know, but I don't know. It's the be, you know, like be consistent, have some stamina, have a point of view. You guys are the experts. Okay. Just do it. Just do it. Podcasting. Just do it.
I'm really curious to know, like, why you started Call Your Girlfriend.
So, you know, for us, I think it was twofold. One, our producer, Gina Delvac, comes from the world of public radio. She's wonderful and great. And she had always been pitching this to us, to Anne and I, to think about doing it. And
shout out to Anne Friedman also.
Shout out Anne Friedman, who is like roasting in Los Angeles right now. But I think that for me too, it was, I think some bro somewhere told me that like only, you know, like it's like a male hobby. And you say that to me and
challenge accepted.
Exactly. You know, it was some like, oh, like men do this in their garages because they have so much patience and what.
And so many
like,
garages.
Please. I'm like, please. And I've been listening. I am a like power fan of This American Life. I've been listening to it forever and ever. And it's obviously great. But I also wanted something that, you know, had like a little levity that was fun and that was representative of who we were. And it started off as this like fun, you know, side project for both of us. And we have, I think, have been really surprised at how well received it's been. And just all the people who reach out to us and tell us that they have ideas to do things. And we're just like, just go and run with it. It's so fun. It's like medium easy. I don't know. You know, it's fun. It and it mirrors the relationship that a lot of people have. I think that it's really important to have public female relationships and just kind of show that there are different models for that. And it's not this like weird catfight that everybody tries to show. And, you know, I'm like, I've never been in those kinds of relationships that you see on TV all the
time. Loving hip hop and
yeah,
Housewives.
You know, and Housewives or even Mean Girls or, you know, I'm just like this. Yeah. And so that was really frustrating to me. I'm like, actually, all of the women that I know, and I roll deep in ladies, are very supportive and are really nice to each other and, you know, like cool and really successful. And I was like, well, why does nobody talk about this stuff? Like that, you know, that drives me crazy. And then you have the other thing where there's just this like all of this vocabulary for talking about romantic relationships, especially in this heteronormative kind of way. And I think that people forget the intimacy of friendship, you know, and how you actually don't have to be like partnered with someone in that way to still to love them and to explore all these different things. And that's, you know, that's kind of part of our jam.
I love what you said about like representation of female friendship, because it really irritated me how critics, particularly male critics, kind of acted as if female friendship on screen particularly got invented with the movie Bridesmaids.
Oh my God.
And like it was some revelation that women do have these relationships that aren't necessarily about tearing each other's hair out.
Right, but I think that that's really telling. It's like it's the men that are surprised by it, whereas the rest of us are like, yes! Like,
finally, this
is what we're dying for. And Bridesmaids is an amazing movie. I can't tell you how many times I've seen it with so many different girlfriends, but there are so many more contexts than that. You know, and there are so many more stories to be told. And it is really frustrating that it's you only ever get like one shot at representation, according to white Hollywood men.
Exactly. Speaking of female friendship, I was reading a Q&A you did with Of a Kind.
Yes.
And one of the pieces that I really loved is you talked about a piece of advice that a friend had given you. And you talked about, I think it was Lena Dunham told you, she said something about making sure that when you receive criticism from people that you respect, that you really absorb it and you don't just write it off as sort of like hate.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's really important. Like, Lena is obviously somebody who is really public and is, you know, she's out there and she does all of this amazing work and also takes a lot of, you know, criticism from a lot of different sides. Because guess what? People have a lot of opinions when you're a young woman creating things. But, you know, I think that that's something in her work ethic that I really appreciate. And it's something that she is really vocal about, is that, you know, sometimes it's some people want to tear you down, but sometimes people say things that you should be really open and receptive to. Anne Friedman, my co-host for Call Your Girlfriend, also has this hater matrix. This is how you receive criticism, right? It's like, what quadrant are people in? Are they trying to like tear you down? Are they irrelevant? Or are they really people that you should listen to? And I think that it, you know, it takes like being humble and it takes also just like wanting to learn and wanting to move forward. But I think that that's something that a lot of my close friends have that I really appreciate.
Mm-hmm. And just a quick note about Anne Friedman's like pictorial representations of stuff. I have been a longtime fan of Anne Friedman's writing and her pie charts separately, but I didn't know the pie charts were made by Anne Friedman.
Same woman.
Despite the fact that she has www.annefriedman.com at the bottom of every pie chart.
Yes.
I miss that fact.
Not to be confused with Anne Friedman, the wife of Thomas Friedman. The New York Times, right?
That reminds me of the other Aminatou Sow.
Wait.
Can you talk to us about...
Oh, explain. Explain.
You stole her web address.
Whatever. This conversation got real fast. So, Aminatou Haidar-Sow is a Western Sahara activist. Western Sahara is this, I guess, parcel of land next to Morocco that Morocco won't let be great.
Put that on the hater matrix.
Like, no, exactly, right? Like, Western Sahara is like, give us our own country. It's not happening. But so anyway, you know, this woman and I have been duking it out for who's going to rise at the top of the SEO crop.
Ouch.
And, you know, that lady be going to jail every once in a while because she's an activist. So I will say I have won this round.
Yeah.
But shout out to Western Sahara activists everywhere.
Yes. Some people who are searching for her right now are finding this podcast episode and they're like, oh, she made it to San Francisco.
Okay. You know, it happens every once in a while. Like some Italian person will tweet at me like, more power to you. And I'm like, wrong one.
Keep moving.
Whenever people like hate on, you know, like people of color for having hard names, I'm always like, we have great SEO under these names. You can hate my name all you want. Like, I pop up on page one.
So, you know, I was going to ask you that because I noticed when I started looking you up that sometimes you go by Aminatou and sometimes you go by Amina. And I'm Jamidra and I go by Jamie sometimes. That's like my bartender / Starbucks / you know, when I was in my early 20s.
I'm Amanda
name.
At Starbucks.
Really? I went through a time in my early 20s when I was very much like, Mom, why did you give me the name Jamidra? Like, I have to put it on a resume, and I was afraid of how I would be perceived.
I didn't know that you were uncomfortable with your name.
Well, now I'm at a point where it's just kind of like, this is me. You need to accept it. You see the hair, you see the name, whatever.
That's awesome.
But when I was younger, I very much was like, okay, well, people are going to judge me based on this.
Yeah, you know, like, for me, I think it's I totally identify with that. Like, I'm originally from Guinea in West Africa. We grew up in Nigeria and in France. when I was growing up, I went to like really fancy private French schools and I went to American schools. But the whole, you know, it's like the experience of living in Africa surrounded by white people is also like a very weird one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that there's, especially when I was growing up, and I can track this even through my other siblings and knowing that we were so aware of our blackness and we were so aware of our Africanness. Mm-hmm. And I think that even when I moved to the United States, because I don't identify as African-American. I'm not. You know, I know I sound like a California Valley girl. Shout out, English is a second language programs everywhere. But, you know, I'm like African-African for mm-hmm. real. And even in that context, there was always, when I first moved here, I know, you know, I was hyper aware of like, you know, like African-Americans are the cool blacks. And then
the category.
Yeah. And I mean, and honestly, like in Europe, that's how they make us feel, right? It's like mm-hmm. Josephine Baker is the jam, but every, you know, like African immigrants are like treated really poorly. And so I was really aware of that. And part of the reason for me, at least in English speaking context, that I started going as Amina is mostly because I was annoyed at people saying my name wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, they're always like, it's too hard. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's in fact, you know, but I think that it also just takes being a little bit more confident in who you are. And, you know, yeah. like Mary J. Blige says, we're all on a journey mm-hmm. and you get there. And now I regret a little bit like being a wuss about it earlier.
Yeah,
I was
me
like,
too.
I really wish that I had been more forceful about it. In my family, I have even a diminutive name, which is like part of our Fulani culture, like where I'm from. And so having people call me by different names doesn't offend me as much anymore. I just wish that I had really stuck by my guns with those people in college who were saying my name wrong.
When I went to college for the first semester, I was embarrassed about my name. People would always get it wrong.
Wait, what part of your name?
Dan said I was like...
Emmanuel. I didn't like it.
Who gets Emmanuel wrong?
People are awful.
They're so unable to do this.
Emmanuel's
thing.
Like a top 10 like Bible name. Like, who doesn't know how to say
it's in like a Christmas carol. It's not the book, but like one generic like carol. You sing it.
Yeah. O Come Emmanuel, which everyone would laugh in school because
It sounds sexy. And,
but I didn't get it at the time because I wasn't sexual. So I was like,
little did they know how you'd blossom.
So I just kept like looking around and be like, you guys are losers. Like, it's my name. Who cares? And they're just like, you'll get it in like 5 years.
Yeah.
You're so slow.
Why were you the younger kid in the class full of older, sexually mature kids singing this joke at you?
Oh, they're just white kids, and I was from an immigrant family, and we were not allowed to date or leave our house and stuff like that.
Shout out, immigrant parents.
Yeah. Thanks for everything.
Thanks for everything.
Please pay my therapist bill. One time at a Starbucks, I said, Emmanuel. It comes back, and they keep saying this name, and I'm like, I don't know what that is, and where's my coffee, and whatever. And they wrote it, Baniel. Baniel. It's like,
kids are so stupid.
But the Starbucks, like really, they will just take it there with the names. They will just make something up.
Can I tell you my Starbucks story, though?
Yeah, please mm-hmm. do.
So I was living in New York City. Across the street from my work, I drink like 4 coffees a year because my body can't handle it. But I go to, like, I'm a big fan of whatever that tea cooler thing at Starbucks is. I go to Starbucks. I order my tea. Clearly say my name is Amina or some very, you know, like whatever name I give them. I get the thing. I go back to work and my coworker is like, what does it say on your cup? Y'all, it said ebony on the cup.
Oh, no.
So
she
annoyed.
Looks like an ebony.
I was so annoyed. And I had this like moment where I was like, OK, if I tweet this right now, I could be living in like free Starbucks for the rest of my life. Like, I can start a minor incident, right? But I wanted to make sure that the person who had served me was white because otherwise I'm not comfortable like narking on someone else. Mm-hmm. So I like did a drive-by by the Starbucks and they were racially ambiguous, all of those kids. And I was like, I want to shame Starbucks, but you know, I'm like, these kids could be family. That was really hard for me. I was like, we could have had free Starbucks for the rest of our lives.
The inner struggle, the decisions we make.
I know. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Ebony.
That is so cold-blooded. Ebony. Of like anything I tell you. And they're all kids. No. You know what? Aww. It's okay. Aww. I took one for the team that day.
So switching gears away from Starbucks, I was reading this interview that you did with The Gentlewoman.
Wow, you've been reading a lot of.
I went way back.
I should probably Google my stuff.
It's all been
creepy.
Out there.
Oh, boy.
We kept getting this other woman, this activist.
Listen, if she would just chill out, she could have been here. She could have been a podcast mogul, too.
Yeah.
We would have welcomed her.
So in that interview, you were talking about moving here and how you weren't sure how you felt about it and that you missed Brooklyn. And it's been
In San Francisco.
San Francisco. And it's been a while. So I was wondering, how do you feel about San Francisco now? And
just a deep breath.
Okay, be honest.
Deep breath. Something happened to me in the last 3 weeks where I feel a little less anxiety about San Francisco. I moved here to work at a big tech company. And, you know, I think that for the first time in my career, I was working in the dominant industry in the town that I lived in. And that was really hard for me in a way that I hadn't anticipated. It's like when I lived in D.C., I worked in and around politics, but not necessarily. I worked in New York and I got to like work in media and do different stuff. But also those places are bigger and they're bigger communities. I think that I moved here and just got thrown into, you know, being a technology worker. Mm-hmm. And I was one of those people that I would like get on the shuttle and go to the South Bay every day. And that was really hard for me. And I think, too, that I really underestimated how far away California is from my family. You know, like it's I added like 6 more hours to you know, from everybody that I loved. And then the time zones, it's like talking to my siblings is almost nearly impossible. You know, some of it was just like being a baby and moving, and I hadn't quite anticipated these things. But I think that honestly, like just being thrown into being a tech worker and not really encountering people of color. Like, San Francisco is white in a way that is really creepy. Mm-hmm. Like, unlike a lot of other places that I've lived, you know? I'm like, I am very familiar with, like, living around a lot of white people, and it usually doesn't bother me. But there's something about it here specifically that is very eerie.
You're very aware.
Yeah, you're very aware, and it's, like, the same kind of human everywhere you go. I don't know. And then working in tech and just honestly always have to surmount like being the only woman of color and always, you know, just having to prove yourself day in and day out, that takes a toll on you that I think is really hard. Also, San Francisco is weird. It's just like a really, you know, it's a really weird city. You can, even in the almost, you know, like in the year and a half that I've been here, so much has changed already. And seeing that, you know, the city be so expensive and not be welcoming to people who want to work in the arts or want to work in nonprofits and fostering like different kinds of cultures, that's something that to me has been really hard to witness, you know, and knowing that I'm part of the problem.
I'm wondering how you're handling this idea that you are the tech person, because there's a lot of emotion behind like tech workers are coming. And I'm wondering like how that feels for you, because you recognize that it's happening, but you're also sort of people would categorize you.
So like, you know, I'm like, I am the tech worker, but also I'm like, I'm a black woman in tech.
Yes.
It's everything MLK died for. Like, don't get it twisted. I'm like, I like, please.
T-shirts, I am everything MLK died for. Can
exactly.
Print that.
So it's, you know, like, I feel bad, but I think that there's something about that just makes me really sad. Watching people not be super engaged with their city, you know, and not really be good neighbors or even know how to engage, and how there's such a divide in San Francisco between locals and the technology workers. And I don't think that it has to be that way, you know? I'm like, I know a lot of people who work in tech who do amazing things and give back to their communities, but I think that the companies are seen as such like adversaries, and it's been going on for so long, and we're just getting to a point where everybody is pointing fingers and is really upset at each other, and I don't know how to get back to that. But I think that it's weird that you just have this town that is run by like baby millionaires who, like, don't do any philanthropy. They don't give to the arts. And I'm like, you have Medici money now. Like, you know, like, I'm sorry, that's part of the social contract. You got to use your money for good things.
I can't even imagine, you know, for working in a media company, period, usually if you're a person of color, you're probably in the minority. And then there's a lot of talk about the tech companies and what their stats are as far as hiring people of color. So going into work every single day, how do you prepare for that? And how do you just deal with the fact that, yes, I'm going to be the brown voice in the room, or I'm going to be the black voice in the room?
I mean, it's really hard, right? But I'm sad to say that, one, we're kind of all used to it, because whatever industry you're coming from, if, you know, like, you're a brown person, like, you're used to being the only. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I look at those diversity numbers, and they're so shameful. Like, they're just the most shameful things in the world. It's like, hi, you hired 1,000 people, 7 of them were black. You know, I won't name the company. You can Google it yourself.
Research Google's your friend.
You know, and seeing a lot of the, like, the civil rights leaders are, like, pushing them to disclose and seeing what they're disclosing, it's, the numbers are abysmal. And it's not just, it's not even just minorities. Like, the women numbers are shameful. Mm-hmm. The women in, you know, like, women managers that you have are really shameful. And they always tell you all of this stuff about how it's, you know, they have a pipeline issue problem. Or, but it's, even if you look at just the population of the Bay Area, those numbers are not representative of the people who are capable to be there. And, but at the same time, it is really tough to feel like you as, you know, like as the brown person or, you know, the black person, you always have to be speaking out about it. And for me, like, I try to push back a lot and, you know, and I'm like, I don't know, this is not, I'm like, I'm not going to single-handedly solve this problem. Like, you should solve it. I think anybody who has hiring power in the Bay Area is responsible for this problem, mm-hmm. you know, in our industry. But they shouldn't pat themselves on the back. It is really shameful. They've been reporting them, I think, 2 years running now, and nothing has changed, you know? And I'm like, these are, this is like our like nation's like best minds, and we're solving these like incredible problems through engineering. You're trying to tell me you can't find like, I don't know, like a couple more women and a couple more like people of color to work at your company? That's ridiculous.
What would you tell women who are thinking about getting into tech?
I tell them that it's hard, but like be here, because people are building amazing things, you know, like they're amazing things are happening. And it's like, don't let yourself get left behind because they don't want you here. And that's been the thing that's been really striking to me. I've met some of the smartest people, some of the coolest people just doing some wonderful work here. And it breaks my heart that some people think that it's not accessible to them.
Since we are a pop culture podcast, this seems like the perfect time to ask you about movie star Jennifer Lawrence's recent essay.
J-Law, yes.
For Lena Dunham's Lenny Letter, which is fantastic. And if anyone hasn't read it, then they should go and read it. And just to praise it a little, she talks about how the Sony email hack, the email dump that came out of that big hack, revealed that she, as a woman on the set of American Hustle, the David O. Russell movie, earned so much less than her male mm-hmm. co-stars. Mm-hmm. And she found out about it at the like at the same time that we all did as well. And I can't imagine what that must have been like. And so she wrote this essay about how what that felt like, and that she said she felt like she'd failed as a negotiator, essentially that she'd failed other women, essentially. Yeah. And I'm guessing that you've read that too. What was your instant reaction to that?
You know, I really identified with that on a gut level because, you know, I'm like, obviously I'm not making Jennifer Lawrence type money. I wish.
What?
But the sentiment is the same, right? Where you, it's like you look at the statistics and you realize that like, yes, women are really underpaid. Like mm-hmm. it's real. But it's also really hard sometimes not to internalize. And this is why the patriarchy sucks. It's because it makes you feel that it's your fault. And I think that my reaction to a lot of that letter was, is I heard her shoulder a lot of the blame, you know, when I went to be like, no, like, you are not the problem. Yes. Like, yes, you were not a strong negotiator, but it's also crazy that you're offered so much less money than your male counterparts. And I do wish that she had been a little more forceful, and I wish that she had, you know, it sucks because she's the public one, and so we kind of expect, you know, like, we expect her to use her platform to be more forceful about these issues. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, you know, she has to work with all these people mm-hmm. again. And even when you, if you're a woman and, you know, you try to be a shark and you ask or whatever, you still have to sugarcoat it a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And you have to, you know, you either have to use humor or be apologetic about it, or, you know, like, you're just trying to find out, like, what the thing is. And I think that that's a double-edged sword.
But you dare not be likable.
I feel like back in the day, I used to have this reputation of kind of being a pushover because mm-hmm. I'm a Libra. I'm just like, let's all just like be chill with each other. And there have been moments where, you know, ages ago, a boss took me aside before a meeting and was like, what are your ideas? What are you going to say to like the people above us? And I gave all my ideas, and then he took them and used them. And
what?
I didn't say anything.
Does it haunt you? Because when moments like that happen and I don't say anything, it haunts me.
I mean, I'm talking about it right now. Years
later.
Oh,
on the podcast. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right,
revenge fantasy.
Mm-hmm. I'm coming for you.
You know what I call those Ally McBeal moments? You know how she used to just zoom out and she'd be like throwing some over.
She just goes into her avatar and she's like, murder time.
God, I used to love that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that is really tough. And I think that it's just tied into, you know, it's tied into a lot of stuff for us. It's like, one, if you don't come from a background where, you know, you were taught to be really assertive or just really know yourself, like, that's one thing. But I think, too, that, you know, as, like, children of immigrants, mm-hmm. we, you know, like, being in the workplace is tough because you're like taught at home to revere people and to, you know, really defer to your elders or whatever.
And it's always like, oh, you're really lucky if you succeeded. And like the entitlement that I see in some of my peers
right.
was not ingrained in me. I'm just like always surprised that I'm places.
Yeah.
Surprised and thrilled when you get
yeah.
Right. And I don't know. I saw Minnie Kaling talk about this at Sundance and it was so amazing on this panel where, you know, because people always ask her, they're always like, how are you so confident? Because why would a brown woman be confident, mm-hmm. right? And I love how she always shuts them down. And she was like, you know, honestly, it was all my parents. She's like, I live my life like I'm a handsome, tall, like Scandinavian.
I read that.
And
quote.
I was
that
like,
was
that's, I was like, that's like, thank you. And ever since like hearing her say that and just kind of really owning it, I think that, you know, it's like you just have to run with it and never have to explain yourself all of the time. But yeah, it's like you see other people be really entitled and sometimes they're very mediocre and I'm like, God. Yeah.
I have a quote. Okay, so one of my favorite podcasts other than Call Your Girlfriend is Another Round with Heaven and
yes,
Tracy.
Yes, they're so good.
So mm-hmm. they had an episode in which I cannot remember her name and I wish I could, in which they brought in the woman who heads up, she's in
Stacey
charge of...
Marie
yes.
as well. Stacey is like the boss of
oh
all
my
bosses.
Gosh. And so one of the quotes, my favorite quotes from that show was, carry yourself with the confidence of a mediocre white
yep.
man. And Stacey talked about when the hiring process and how she's a woman of color in charge. She's in charge of hiring. And she talked about the difference between men and women mm-hmm. and how they present their accomplishments. And women will say, well, you know, I worked on this thing and I contributed to this project. And, you know, I did this. I kind of sort of helped in that. And men will walk in and be like, I built that whole thing by myself.
Yeah.
I'm responsible yeah. for, you know what I mean? It's just like yeah. a different way in which we communicate how we've accomplished something. And we don't yeah. really.
It is really tough. It's like, especially for me, when I look at my career, you know, like I obviously like work in tech. I make really good money. But it's like when I think about where I come from, you know, my grandma got married when she was 13. She had 1 million children. Mm-hmm. By the time I was like 25, I was making more money than both of my parents ever made combined. You know, where I come from, it's like, I am popping.
Okay.
But, you know.
Success story.
But it's a thing where, yeah, talking about money is really tough. Every time I'm negotiating for a job or I'm asking, sometimes I'll hear these numbers and I'm like, I'm just happy to be here.
Yes.
I'm just happy to be here. And the fact that I didn't die of malaria when I was 5, you know, like that, like for where I come from, like for me, like that is huge.
So how do you push past that? So for women who are out there and they're like, I want to negotiate, and they're hearing these voices in their head about just be happy that you're here. Just be grateful that you're here.
Practice. Fake it till you make it.
Yes.
Practice.
Have a script.
Practice. No, I honestly, when I do salary negotiations, I have a script. I practice in front of my mirror all the time. Just like tell yourself over and over and over and over and over again. And also, you know, like if you are somebody that's in power enough or you are established enough that you can do that for somebody who is younger than you or coming up and just really kiss down and invest in them,
mm-hmm.
always remember to just like give them that boost. Like I remember one time being in this meeting at work where I thought I did not belong. It was really early in my career and it was like our VP was there and all these people. And, you know, like literally this like black man appeared out of nowhere. I was like, this is like an IKEA ad. And he was like, you belong here. And then just like moved along. You know, and he was the only other like person of color in the room. And that like meant so much to me. It meant so, you know, like, not to say that the burden is always on you to, like, reach out to people, but I think that, you know, for Anne and I, like, something that has been really important in our careers and even in the way that we do our podcast and carry ourselves is, it's just this, like, reminder to, like, extend a hand down. It's mm-hmm. like, kiss down, don't kiss up. It's like, yes, you'll always have opportunities to, like, kiss up to people, but really remember, you know, like, the people who are up and coming
kiss
because
down.
It's so, like, also, like, you know, the way the economy is going, those people are going to be hiring me one day. So,
yeah.
If anything, be mindful
that's
of that.
That's your boss right there. That
exactly.
is your boss.
So the main takeaways from a lot of what we talked about.
Highlights.
Kiss down, don't kiss up.
Mm-hmm. I love
Amazing.
That.
We should listen to Rihanna, Bitch Better Have My Money More. And if you don't like that song to pump you up before a negotiation, you should listen to Walk Like an Egyptian, but think of it as Walk Like an Anglo-Saxon.
Oh, that's good.
I like what you did there.
Yeah,
I
know. That's some wordplay.
Okay.
That's
so
good. I love that.
That's also like the first time the Bangles have been shouted out.
Shout out Bangles.
Yeah, exactly.
Shout out Eddie
Finally,
music.
Someone is considering the Bangles.
I see you. Okay, so when we interviewed Kamau Bell at our live event, we had some pop culture debates that we wanted him to settle. And okay. I'm going to ask you some of those.
I'm going to settle everything.
So,
okay.
Did Adnan do it?
I don't think I can go on the record on this.
You can pass if you need to.
Yo, I still have nightmares about this.
Yeah. I grew up in Baltimore, like miles away from this. So I know the Best Buy.
I was waking up at 3 a.m. Pacific so I could catch the podcast like drop at 6 a.m. This is going to stress me out. The last episode was the first time where I felt like I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I will say. Even if Adnan did do it, he should not be in jail.
Hello.
There you go. There you go.
That's the consensus.
That's, you know.
Mistrial.
Yeah. Prison reform for Adnan.
Yep.
Even if he did do it. There's no receipts.
That's the big takeaway.
No
prison reform.
It was the bit where Sarah Koenig said, if he didn't do it, he's the unluckiest man on earth.
I know. Yeah. It was like literally in the last 30 seconds, I changed my mind. Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh. But you know, we don't know.
We'll
also,
know.
Asia McClain. Like,
Asia.
Yeah. Asia McClain, crazy. Jay is crazy. So I used to stalk Jay on Facebook before the rest of the world was on top of his Facebook.
Because Reddit got on top of it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And I was like, oh, y'all, like, internet detectives ruining my game. But, man. And also, it's like the first thing that I did when I heard all of Serial was call my brother, who's a little younger than me. And I was like, don't do any drugs. Don't kill anyone. Because the thing that was so crazy to me is how... And I feel that Serial did not, like, they didn't expand on it so much. It's like all these kids are, like, high at a party, and they literally don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is going to turn me into a Republican. I was like, no yeah, more yeah. drugs.
Yeah, the opening, it was just like, what did you do last week? I don't know. Yeah.
I keep a meticulous Google calendar because of that. I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, since before.
Is it your alibi?
Because one, a long time ago in the New York Times, not a long time ago, like a couple of years ago, I read the story about this woman who her boyfriend was like some catfish person who told her that he was like a cop, but really he was a con artist.
Aww.
And then because of him, she ended up going to jail and she couldn't prove any of the places that she was. And so I remember reading that story. I'm like telling the story so wrong. But like my one takeaway from that story was use a credit card everywhere.
Every time.
I was like checking into places. Yeah. I also like, you know, I'm like, I'm a single lady. Nobody's going to accuse me of a crime.
Yes.
I'm like, I have receipts for every day of my life.
Yes, that is
And
smart.
So when I was listening to that on Serial, that first opening when she's like, what were you doing last Tuesday? I'm like, I can tell you exactly where I was. Like, I don't play these
Oh my
games.
God, I think you're actually the answer to, you know, Mitch Hedberg, the comedian, he has this routine about how, you know, when you buy a donut and they say, do you want the receipt? He's like, whoever asks for the receipt? You don't need
this
it.
Girl,
like, now.
Take
We just solved it like 20 years later. R.I.P.
That too.
Okay, can I ask a question? There's a burning question.
Yes.
Instagram model. Legitimate profession or no?
Okay, so this is killing me because yesterday I legit wrote down a taxonomy of the Instagram models.
Okay, please.
Can you say ho on public radio?
Sure.
Okay. I think that 2015 is the year of the hoe. Like, the hoes are winning in 2015 in a way that, like, nobody's noticing. I'm just like, hoes are back. Like, in a big way. And I'm, like, it is not derogatory. I think that's amazing. Like, video vixens, like, everybody's back. I think that Instagram model is a legit profession because guess what? They all have supplementary incomes. So here's my taxonomy. You have the model, DJ / bartender.
Mm-hmm.
That's like its own thing. There's anybody in the love and hip hop / basketball wives universe.
Yes.
Like
okay.
They're kind of their own things. You have the art ho, HEAUX. Then you have the like workout models. There's like all these girls that are just like working out. Then there are like people who are married / about to marry rappers or Kevin Hart. That like it's
Kevin
like
Hart is his own category.
Kevin Hart is his own category, and I mean like I love it. I love it. I was like, this is my favorite thing in the whole world. When an Instagram model has a hoverboard, that's like the ultimate everything for me.
And they keep falling off them. That's the best thing about them.
I'm so happy. But what? I think it's a legit job. I'm like, okay. I'm sorry. It's like, have you seen those selfies? Yes. Also the butt selfies, belfies. I'm like, ooh. I can't do that.
It takes talent.
I'm like, I can't. That does take talent. I'm like, I don't know how to do that.
Belfie sounds like a name, like Sir Humphrey Belfie.
Sir Humphrey of the butt selfies.
Of butt share.
Okay, next debate.
Uh-oh.
Why did Solange go Mortal Kombat on Jay-Z in the elevator?
Yo, I don't know that we can talk about this on the radio.
They're listening. They have this room bugged.
You know, we will never know. Mm-hmm. All that matters is that they're a happy family now.
Aww.
Give them all the best. I'm not trying to get the Bayhive to come after me.
Yeah.
So
You are smart.
This is not in my repertoire of things to talk about. Also, whatever Solange did, she was justified. Jay-Z has forgiven her. The family's okay.
Yes.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Listen, I will talk about anybody, but like you cannot play with the agency.
Okay. Last episode, Carly and I had a duel.
We did.
It was Taylor Swift related. I know you're a Swiftie.
I'm a Swiftie with an open mind.
Yeah. So we went back and forth with lyrics. I had good lyrics, what I thought were good lyrics. She had what she thought was bad lyrics, and Jameedra judged.
I had what I thought were underperforming lyrics.
Wait, are you saying that Taylor Swift has one bad lyric?
I mean, yes. Yes, I very much am. Yeah, I mean, we had a whole duel and everything. There was
I won, by the way.
That's crazy. Only a person not from America would. Then lyrics are strong.
Okay, so
that's
the
whole story.
So much storytelling.
I am not a Taylor Swift fan, but I gotta be honest, I did not realize she writes her own songs.
Yeah,
and that
one
I was like, okay, I got a little bit more. Like I can
dig different genres.
Yeah. So, but. Yeah,
I'm okay. Just. I just had to put Carly on blast and both of them because I was a Swiftie by myself here last week, and now the numbers are equal. So
you
I feel
can
better.
Accuse Taylor Swift of a lot of things, but the lyrics are.
Can you lyrics are on point.
Can you accuse her of that video that she did?
The video was wrong. Ooh. And I'm like, come on. You can't go to Africa and not have black people in your video. Come on.
Yeah.
Also, people who have like colonial fantasies, I'm like, of course you have colonial fantasies because you're white. Like, I don't have colonial fantasies. So it's a painful time for my people.
That's like that. If you can go back to any period.
Yeah, I mean, like, black people don't play the time machine game. Like, yeah, you know, but we talked about this actually on Call Your Girlfriend because these girls wrote us in and they were like big Swifties and they were like, whatever. And I was like, you know, I'm not going to indict her entire body of work. Like, you cannot like somebody's work and it doesn't mean that like everything that they've done is garbage. I was like, you know, a rare unforced error for Taylor Swift.
Tennis term.
You know, I'm like, she's not the only one that was complicit in what happened there. The director who made that, what's his name? Joseph Kahn. He made that jumpin' video. You know, Joseph Kahn, you know black people. Like, how are you going to go to, like,
you know
Kenya
better,
and make a music video and
you
be
know
like,
better, sir.
You know what I mean? I'm like, we thought we could trust you.
Yeah. So next time you go to a Taylor Swift concert on a private jet, I see you. Please invite
me. Instagram stalking. Uh-huh.
Yeah, because I was at the Julia Roberts Joan Baez show, and you were at a way better one.
I was at Ellen DeGeneres / Natalie Maines Dixie Chick.
Yes.
I cried. I like burst into tears.
Of course you did. Who wouldn't?
Arena shows always make me cry. Like I just, you know, like how there's two places I cry, at the airport and at like pop shows that I've paid too much money to be at. I'm just like, oh, I can't handle this.
So I gotta know. From episode 31 of Call Your Girlfriend, you talked about an email that you received in which, was she like a PR person for a nudist camp reached out to you and you were completely uninterested and somehow this woman has opened your mind to perhaps attending or going to a nudist camp.
So here's the thing.
Did you go?
I have not gone yet. But the resort is so nice. I will be attending Q1 2016.
Yes!
Exclusive to the cooler.
Fiscal quarter.
And I'll be happy to come back and tell you all about nudist culture. I'm like, I don't know about taking your clothes off in front of strangers, but I'm like, look at this place. Free vacation.
Shout out Sheila.
Ooh. Aminatu, thank you so much for assuming that we're still going to be on the air when that happens.
Are you kidding? I am rooting for you guys. Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
Thank you for coming
in. Thank you.
So we end every episode with a song, and we were hoping you had one top of mind that we could roll out of this episode in.
What do you mean, Justin Bieber?
Oh.
Because it, one, I've been a believer since day one. Love you forever, Justin. Don't listen to the haters. Justin has great jams. This song is tropical EDM. What a time to be alive.
Yes.
It's incredible. Justin is back in a big way. I love this song so much because it's like the redemption of Justin, and it's a great song. I listened to it on a loop, and I had to stop listening to it on Spotify because my friends would make fun of me because it's, you know, like it shows
that
people.
It's all but about that private session.
I know, but listen, I found a YouTube person who made a 1 hour loop. Those people are doing the God, like the Lord's work. And I'm like, thank you. I just put this on and then I'm a happy person. So also maybe I think this song is a consent anthem if you listen close enough.
Mm. Yeah, he's just trying to figure out.
He asks every step of the way. And you know, in California, like consent education is very important to us. Mm-hmm. So shout out Justin.
He's educating the people.
Yeah. So let's listen to Justin Bieber.
What do you mean?
Thank you, Amina, for coming in.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. And thank you to Susie Racho in the booth.
Yay.
Thank you to David Marcus, who is the executive in charge of arts and our podcast daddy.
Yes.
Oh, I
don't know if he's going to like me calling him that.
P Daddy.
You better repeat that one over again.
P Daddy.
P Daddy.
Okay, there we go. That's what I'm going to call him from
like
now on.
I feel like he'll be cool with that.
Yeah, P Daddy. That's really chill. And Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs, who Aminatu knows.
Yes.
Who did our theme music.
Yes. The best.
Yeah, so we had a lot of titans in this mix. So if you're not listening to this podcast,
get your life together.
Get a
damn fool.
Life
don't
together.
Sleep on the cooler.
Subscribe, rate us, review us.
Sure. Walk like an Anglo-Saxon.
Can we just?
I cannot believe there's two Bengals shoutouts.
Twice.
15.
And sing.